Hello and welcome to Max Spoilers from MinMax. I'm Ben Hansen, joined by Brian Vohr.
Hey.
Former coworker from Game Informer, and now, what do you do all day? You just sit in your house in Minneapolis, take care of kids?
Twiddle my thumbs.
That seems great. Well, welcome. We're honored to have you, and we're joined by one of your oldest friends, Ross, the Star Wars Guy Fund.
Hey, I'm so happy to be back, and I am so excited to talk about this episode.
Yes, we are spoiling everything in the first episode of The Mandalorian's second season, and I want to put some real limits on the sucker because I have not watched any trailers for Mandalorian season two. So, like, if limit it to even just this episode alone, I'd appreciate it.
I would say you're pretty in the clear because it seemed like a lot of the trailer that was out there that I saw, the first one, was mostly scenes from the first like 10 minutes or so, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was almost all from the underground, like wrestling, Gamorrean, league, which I totally loved.
When that scene happened and the Gamorrean went through the table, I thought, well, Brian Vohr's eyes just exploded because he was so happy to see that. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, this is the best season opener I can think of. This is perfect.
Combining WWE and Star Wars.
I love that guy just decided to try to make the suicide dive out of the ring onto Mando on the floor and totally missed.
Fantastic. Ross, just as we were lining up things in Discord here, maybe on Slack, you mentioned that you were so excited to talk about this episode.
Yeah, just totally outrageous. Like, it just blew the lid off of any episode from the first season, even, right?
But you
in
mean,
terms of like runtime, like special effects, like everything, basically.
Yeah, that's interesting to directly compare it to anything. I still hold as a really special moment in that first season, like the reveal of the child, as being like a real, oh, okay, this show isn't messing around. So it's tough to compete with that moment for me. But even throughout this episode, I kept thinking they're saving something for the end. They've got to have their big Baby Yoda stinger at the end to hook us. And they had it, which you can unpack and all that stuff. But Ross, what stood out the most to you?
Well, like you said, the big reveal at the end of Temuera Morrison coming back, of course, as Boba Fett, to jump right into the spoilers.
Yeah, but might as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, when Timothy Oliphant, showed up in the doorway of the saloon, like, obviously he's wearing Boba Fett's armor. And, they're really going for the fake out there, right? Like, you think, oh, my God, it's Boba Fett. And then he orders him a drink and he sits down and, just pulls the helmet off. And Mando's like, what's this guy doing, against the rules?
Were you fooled? Did any of you think that was actually a Boba Fett?
It's that he didn't have it all together. The real Mandalorian's like, so has it all tight, tucked in, everything good to go. This guy was sloppy. You can see the back of his neck. I mean,
yeah. And to be fair, Boba Fett isn't a real Mandalorian, right? So there is some slappiness there, but just the idea he had so much like red and he was like barely covering different patches of him. And like, there wasn't enough of a musical crescendo, I feel like, in that moment to really cement that this is the real deal. So I was skeptical out of the gate there.
Yeah. Plus, his footsteps didn't have the spurs sound effect like the big T's in season one.
I don't know. I think maybe not that shot, but there is a shot later when he's walking in and I think you can hear it a little bit.
Oh,
like, that's interesting.
Nice.
I thought I heard some spurs. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that was him from season one. Does anybody else think that it wasn't Cobb Vanth, as Timothy Oliphant's character is named?
Yeah, that could have been him in season one, or since we saw Boba Fett, it could have just been Boba Fett in season one. But, I thought that was probably Cobb Vanth, because to get super nerdy for a second, mm-hmm. That character was introduced like 5 years ago in some novels. Like, some of the first novels that came out in the Disney era were called Aftermath.
Yeah.
And they had their own storyline, but one thing these novels did was, they each had about a dozen interludes in them, and Cobb Vanth was a recurring character in each book. So he had like three appearances, and he was like, exactly like the character is here, lawman who bought, scarred Mandalorian armor from Jawas, and then I think he like teamed up with the Rancor Keeper from Return of the Jedi to like fight off bandits in this town.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So when I saw that armor, I was like, I think it's going to be that character. But it's kind of crazy that this show, which is now like the biggest thing in Star Wars, took that plot point from the novels of all places and kind of use that as a springboard for this story.
I mean, that gives me hope that they're really paying attention to the new era of lore, you know, and trying to make good on that. So, okay, help me out. With Aftermath then, it just says he bought some armor from Jawas. It doesn't explicitly say, it's green with a hint of red.
I'm definitely going to go back and read it. It definitely didn't say Boba Fett's armor, but it might have said like that they scavenged it out of a Sarlacc or something. Okay, so it was like clear that that's what it's supposed to be.
Gotcha.
And then when you see him in here and it's like, it's got the Boba Fett dent in the helmet and then like the little logo on his thing or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, obviously the same guy.
Pretty fun to get to see him use that visor. And I like that it's a little bit chunky as it moves down and up, like, shoots the rocket.
Yeah, that rocket.
I wonder where he gets, like, how many rockets came with that Jawa deal? Like, it's like each one is so precious.
The other thing I loved about this armor is that Mando activates his rocket pack just like Luke did in Return of the Jedi, or just like Han did maybe when he hits it in the back and it just sends him launching off. It's like, oh, that weakness is still there, I guess.
Mandalorians are the greatest fighters. They made this amazing armor that everybody wants, but if you just touch their jetpack, they go flying.
Yeah.
It's so silly, but you know, I guess it's fine.
I gotta say, since we're already talking about the very end, I really liked how they just faked us out the whole time where it's like, you know what? I'm okay with the Jabba Fett being actually dead and like that was just like his armor that we were teased with in season one.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to bring everyone back like Darth Maul, you know? So the fact that it was like a double twist, and I tried to stay away from as much casting stuff as possible. So I don't know if you guys heard Temuera Morrison was coming back or not, but it was a nice shock for me.
Yeah, I think I saw it, but to be fair, I forgot it by the end. I did not expect that to be the stinger there.
Yeah, there's one larger piece of casting news I thought that captured all my attention really, and so I did not. I don't remember if I saw the Temuera Morrison thing. I might have, but yeah, it was a surprise when he showed up at the end for me.
Yeah,
how great is it to see him back after, you know, so many Clone Wars and Rebels episodes where he didn't do any of those trooper voices, to see him like back in that role?
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't think he's done anything Star Wars since probably either episode 3, or if he redid the Boba Fett voice for like, you know, newer special editions of the original trilogy. But
sure.
I mean, that's at least 10 years probably.
And I like how effed up and scarred he was. And he's got like some weird clothes on. I'm sure fans are going to be dissecting every, you know, inch of his new look, but it's so cool.
Yeah, it seems like the fauna on Tatooine all has very acidic like properties, because the crate dragon was like spitting out acid and presumably that's what's inside the Sarlacc too. So
okay, you talk about fake outs, Brian. That was where I thought this was going. Is once the crate dragon's like bah, like vomiting everywhere, it's like, okay, they said the crate dragon ate the Sarlacc. So I expected like Boba Fett to come out with the puke after that first round of vomit. I'm like, oh, he's going to be lying there in the vomit. I know it's going to happen. And no. He just likes to puke acid vomit. It's fine.
Yeah. You thought that like one of those times Boba Fett was just going to come shooting out of there.
Really,
and that
did.
Would be his introduction. That just would be incredible.
Out of whale's blowhole. Woo. Cause I mean, that was so crazy. I mean, there's a lot to dissect here in this episode, but just the idea of, okay, when the crate dragon was first showing up in the town, I thought like, oh, is this going to be a Sarlacc? Is it going to be this absurd that it can like move? And it's basically going to be an episode that's like Tremors. But I guess I did not expect it to be a crate dragon. Ross, as a super fan, did you know where that was going the whole time?
I also thought Sarlacc, because we know that they live underground, right? I think this is the first time that crate dragons have been like, you know, like sandworm type creature.
Yeah.
So so that surprised me. I'm totally cool with that though. I like that the crate dragon was making like the Obi-Wan crate dragon voice noise. Remember when he did that in the original movie?
Yeah, it's he gets that crazy idea of like, oh, it turns out Obi-Wan was he batting 1,000 for his impersonation of a crate dragon. Like, he nailed it perfectly, which is insane.
Yeah, although I think it's more like the original Obi-Wan voice and not like the special edition changed voice, where it was more like, whoop!
That's interesting.
Yeah,
like, you're right.
It's changed, what, like 3 or 4 times?
Yeah.
Whatever noise he makes.
Yeah, like animals can make more than one noise, I guess. So maybe the whoop is like the crate dragon mating call or something.
Could be, yeah. I had to look it up to figure out, okay, what is the history of the crate dragon? Surely they've shown it before. And it was in Knights of the Old Republic, which I had forgotten about. And so
yeah, and I think you can get a pearl out of it.
That pearl scene, which was so weird, was just like the ultimate Easter egg for Knights of the Old Republic, which is awesome. Like they know their fan base at this point. They know that they'd go wild for something so specific. Because at first I was like, is this like a BB-8 droid? What is that that they're pulling out of that thing?
Is it a Boba Fett?
Yeah, is it Boba Fett's weird egg that he's going to hatch out of and be reborn again?
Yeah, I was like, why are these guys just like pounding with tools on the meat? I was like, wouldn't they be cutting it up and bringing it home for the fridge? But
yeah. Brian, I saw on the Reddit, they said that this episode was the greatest teaser trailer for Dune ever made.
Yeah, I guess it kind of... the reason why Ben's bringing this up is because I've kind of been reading all the Frank Herbert novels in preparation for the movie that's got way pushed back.
More time.
But yeah, definitely when it was like, ooh, it can sense vibrations, so you can't use the ship, you know, and watching out for all that stuff. It's definitely like, it's got that vibe, but I think Star Wars and Dune have always kind of had kind of a connection.
Yeah.
I think Lucas has mentioned it's, you know, influence on him,
right,
in addition to things like Flash Gordon and all that. So but no, it was cool to get like some Dune this year, even if it's just a Star Wars version of Dune, you know.
Yeah, I like the idea of, yeah, you can't use the ship, so it'll get scared away. There's a part of me that's like, hey, Mando, just put one of your bombs on a Bantha and call it good. It seems like overkill for bringing out all these people, just shoot it out of the lot, and then he had to get swallowed by it. But it's like, he could have let that Bantha run. I think the Great Dragon could have caught it and still been blown up from the inside there. But it was,
yeah, cool. I really wondered if we were heading for like a Jaws type of thing where they get the Bantha in the mouth and then he's got to shoot it with his cool rifle.
I mean, there's a lot of Jaws in this episode, even like when they're trying to like harpoon it and bring it down and stuff. That was sweet.
Yeah,
I was hoping that it would be like going under the sand with like the little barrels on top or something.
Right.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Yeah, I was even waiting like, God, are they going to be so brazen as to make a Smile, You Son of a Bitch reference? Like, will they even inch towards it? But no, they were classy.
There was an amazing Jaws reference in the Clone Wars show where there's like a big shark villain.
Oh, really?
They defeat him exactly like Jaws with the tank in the mouth and then shooting the tank.
He
like even floats down the same way.
I guess that makes sense. You got to do it. That Great Dragon looked awesome. I love, especially when it starts coming up in different spots, when it's on the top of the mountain. I'm like, is this a second Great Dragon? That's so cool. Just showing off how agile it is under the sand.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Just like spraying acid on everyone from up there.
It was a lot of acid, but I didn't see anybody like, I was waiting for a big impact. Or was it just naturally stomach acidic? Like, was it alien acid or stomach acid? I couldn't figure it out.
I think it was like, you know, this will kill you if it touches you, but they just didn't linger on it to be, you know, somewhat more family friendly.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Did it seem like only sand people got hit? Because, you know,
I saw one or two townspeople. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was funny how Mando and Cobb Vanth were just standing up there, though. We're like, okay, you guys all go down there and throw rocks at it or whatever. And we'll stand up here with a button. It takes two of us to push this button.
But they try so hard to make the Marshal seem like such a good guy where he's taking care of people. Like, hey, you stay safe out there as you go down to throw rocks at this Great Dragon.
Yeah. But did you guys notice that his, sorry to interrupt, but no, that the Marshal's speeder was like a pod racer engine that he was just sitting in?
That's probably my favorite bit on the episode. The idea of somebody riding half of a pod racer engine as your speeder is the best. And it looks a lot like Anakin's. There's, you know, debate about whether it's one-to-one. It's Star Wars. Of course it's supposed to be his pod racer. Like, you know, worst case scenario, it's a heavy, heavy nod just to make this universe smaller and smaller and smaller, but whatever. But before I forget, on the Jaws references, there is that shot when the Great Dragon first comes out where you get to see Timothy Olyphant do like the Jaws reaction, the Hitchcock shot, where it's like, whoa, and then the camera's pulling back as it's zooming in. So that was exactly a Jaws reference there, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I love it. That's so great. I just watched Vertigo the other day and realized that's where it came from.
Yeah. Oh, Vertigo's so good.
They invented that reaction shot?
Yeah, or that camera move, like the dolly back and zoom in is I think what it is, you're like zooming, but the background's getting further away.
It's so good. Wow. Also, the weird thing is with that shot, then the episode transitioned to a different aspect ratio, to like the IMAX presentation, which is weird on a home screen, which I had to go back and find, when did this happen? Because you don't notice until the aspect ratio starts changing again at the end, where it's like, wait, what the hell? Are they just doing this for the end? But it turns out, no, they just expanded it for that entire sequence so it can be presented in IMAX if they ever want to in a theater, or like, I don't understand.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't notice that at all.
I didn't notice that either.
Yeah, it's some real geeky stuff in there. Yeah, so let's talk about how small this universe is, which you can criticize Star Wars for, but whatever. Like, I loved in the beginning when he's looking for the Mandalorians. And it, so just so I can keep track of this, if he says, if I find another of my kind, I can chart a path through the network of coverts. Like, I'm trying to remember, why was he so hell-bent on getting another Mandalorian? Because he wants to, like, his goal is to return the child to Yodaville, right?
Yep.
And he thinks he can only do that by finding more Mandalorians?
Yeah, I wasn't quite clear on the connection there. I guess he's just like, I got to reconnect with my people. Maybe they'll have an idea about the Jedi too, or something like that. And yeah, he's just, you know, he's so culturally attuned, I suppose. He just wants to find other Mandalorians no matter what.
Could be, yes.
Yeah, it seems like they have some kind of underground network or something where they can get info that's not readily available.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But then he says, they're like, oh, there's a Mandalorian on Tatooine. He's like, I spent a lot of time on Tatooine. I've never seen a Mandalorian there. It's like, on a planet? Like, yeah, it's such a bold claim. I spent like 2 days on that sucker. I didn't see him at all. So
yeah, no. Well, as we now know, there are at least three towns on Tatooine. And they name check the other two in this episode, Mos Eisley and Mos Espa. So.
I know. It was so funny to have that. Then it's like, why isn't this on the map? Oh, it's been destroyed. And you go there and it's like, four buildings. Like, this should have been on the map. Like, good, yeah, God,
it feels like it could have been on the map, really.
Yeah,
tiny dot there at least.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And speaking of the small universe, that droid that shows the map with Amy Sedaris, that's the R5 droid from the original Star Wars movie that blows its top when Uncle Owen is buying droids. So,
which is my favorite, is that there's that side story where they name it Skippy the Droid, and that they reveal that it has the Force, and that it blew its top to set the entire story of Star Wars in motion, which I don't believe that's canon. Was that even canon back in the day, or was that just a weird comic book or
something? No, I think that was, that was probably like an Infinities comic or something like that. Or one of those collected books. Yeah, definitely not canon, but it's, I like to still think that everyone should call him Skippy.
It'd be nice. Yeah, so, I mean, if you really want to overthink this, it gets so silly. The idea that, okay, so Amy Sedaris has R5 and they use Anakin's pod racer to get out there, and the child is Yoda, which trained Luke. Like, it's just, it's compacting things down, but it makes everybody happy. So, you know what? Hey, everybody, Star Wars isn't real. We should.
Yeah, I mean, the child's not Yoda, right?
Yes, I know, but still the species really of, like, just the strangeness of, you know, one other species.
Unless it's a clone of Yoda, maybe.
That would be so lame.
Does anyone get the vibe, like, when you see a returning character like Amy Sedaris, it's like, oh no, they've come back to die. Like, anytime an old guest character comes back.
I didn't think of that, but I guess how many, well, they can have, I'm trying to think of, like, returning characters they can bring back from the first season. They can bring back the prisoners, like all those survivors, like Bill Burr and that crew, right? But they seem more likely to die than Amy Sedaris. I think they'd want to keep some connection to Tatooine so they can keep coming back again and again just for even more fan service. But I can't imagine more Tatooine fan service than this show has already given us. It's like, stop, please. Tusken Raiders, we get it. They're cool. Please stop.
Do you guys think they're going to stick around on Tatooine so that, you know, Boba Fett can kind of keep tracking him, or do they leave right away and then Boba Fett kind of gets off world and tracks him across space?
That's a great question. I would have thought that they're probably done after this episode. Like, the whole reason he was there has been resolved, I guess. But, you know, you never know, just with sets and stuff like that, if they'd want to reuse it and do another episode there.
I mean, sets, I mean, just use that backdrop from Unreal Engine 4, I guess, you know. But yeah, I think they'd want to keep the planet hopping aspect. So I'd imagine it's one of those situations where they're going to take off in the ship and then Boba Fett will be clinging to the bottom like Sideshow Bob as they fly through space or whatever.
He won't do the old trick where he's got like a second secret ship attached to some garbage. Ooh. And be like,
so yeah, what is
his main move?
What does a big old Boba want here? Just his armor back?
I assume he probably would want his armor back. And, you know, I'm really curious to see what direction they go with it, because are they going to do a thing where they're at odds first? Like, he wants his armor back and Mando's like, well, you're not even a real Mandalorian, and then they fight, but then team up against a greater evil, or I have no idea.
What if he takes it back to the forge, gets the Boba Fett armor all shiny and nice again, Ooh. And that makes Boba Fett even angrier, because he's like, being scruffy and gross is my thing.
I thought you were gonna say melt it down and make a baby Yoda armor.
Oh, that would be so cute. Putting a Boba Fett helmet on baby Yoda? That's so silly.
Little ear holes.
Oh my god, every fan's head would explode at that moment. I mean, yeah, so let's think logistics here. I'm sure they won't get into detail. Actually, knowing this show, maybe they would. But do you think that he was puked out by the Sarlacc pit and then like stripped off his clothes because he's like, ow, wow, 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 acid, ow, wow, wow. And then the Jawas picked it up from there? Or somehow was it like, taking the stem off a cherry in your mouth, somehow the Sarlacc pit like took his armor off inside of him and then spat him out? What's going on?
Great question. I'm sure that's a story to be told, but yeah, if his armor was still like kind of working, you wouldn't think that he would voluntarily discard it. So yeah, maybe that's the Sarlacc that the Crate Dragon ate and he escaped during that process somehow.
Oh yeah.
Just to clarify, this is still about, was it 5 years since Return of the Jedi?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. I think that is the most specific time frame we've got. So yep.
Okay. Yeah.
So Cobb Vanth has been, hanging out in that town for a few years at this point. I love that they were all watching that Death Star explosion YouTube video on repeat.
Was that
just
what
having
it was?
A great time?
Because I was confused because, those miners came in, power hates a vacuum. But it's like, aren't they just watching this as those miners are walking in? Like, they were that ready to go, but were they watching it on repeat? Was that the idea?
I guess so. It's probably like every night they get together and just toast to the Death Star and just keep it running. It's probably great for business.
Yeah, that's true. Great footage. Whoever filmed that, thank you, in the Star Wars universe. They're like that there's one camera ship just filming the explosion of the Death Star floating there in the final battle. It's very absurd.
Speaking of Star Wars technology, I'm always, when they're in the sun in the desert, like no one thinks about sunglasses of all the technology they have. No one's like, you know what? My eyes hurt out here. I'm going to invent sunglasses.
Well, that's how the Mandalorian armor started, is it was just really cool looking sunglasses. Then it just slowly spread from there, I think.
Yeah.
I really loved the several close-up shots of Banthas in this episode. Like the one where like brushing the Bantha's teeth. It's like, yes, this is the stuff I want to see from Star Wars. Just some good Bantha close-ups.
Absolutely. You know, they made those Banthas. They're like, we can use them in Mandalorian, and then we can use them again in Obi-Wan. You know, they're getting their money's worth out of those Banthas.
So you think they brought, one elephant onto their crazy soundstage? The crazy huge screen stage?
I would guess. I mean, is that still considered humane to do that? I have no idea. But if so, I imagine that's what they did.
Yeah, it looked good. It seemed like it was a real elephant. But yeah, what a crazy time for them to pioneer this tech of having... Is there a better word for it, Ross? I forget how they call it. The huge screen, the dome?
Yeah, it's called the... Oh, what is it? It's like the Expanse or something crazy
that.
Yes,
you're right.
Some fancy name.
Yeah, but how crazy is it that that's perfect for filming in this new COVID era? It's like, all right, just test the hell out of everybody as they come in, and then we can just have all our sets. Don't need to travel around the world. Don't need to worry about not being let in other countries. It just seems like a crazy lineup, for timing for them to be able to crank out several seasons of Mandalorian now.
Exactly. And whatever other Star Wars shows that they're going to be filming in there too. So
yeah.
I think that season 2 was entirely completed in terms of filming before March.
Okay.
That's my understanding, but I don't know. They might have started on season 3 already, so.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know if this happened since last time we talked, but I got to interview Phil Tippett, a creature designer, awesome. And he was a little too relaxed, but it was a fun interview. He's just sitting back like this most of the time. But he mentioned that they were hired to do stop motion stuff for seasons 2 and 3. So I'd imagine it was some sort of back-to-back type thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing, at some point, probably Hollow Chess will be coming back in some way. Or I'm sorry, I know there's an official name, Ross, which is?
Djeric.
Thank you. Thank you, Ross, for being the Star Wars guy. God, I was thinking about just filming and COVID as well. How crazy would it have been if Episode 9 was supposed to release this year and they had to just keep delaying it because of COVID? Can you imagine? Or even what if Endgame was supposed to release this year? Can you imagine the nerd rage? It just happened to hit at a time when, like, there was nothing that nerds are screaming out their windows about needing. Like, you know, we were looking forward to Black Widow, but, like, you know, if it's delayed, it's not the end of the world. And it's just crazy that things have lined up in this way where it's after a series of climaxes last year.
Yeah, like, it could have been Game of Thrones as well, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
What would people have had to get super angry about?
I guess the state of the world. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Episode 9 could have maybe used a little more time in the oven, but, you know, who knows what they would have been able to do with it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like when you have a movie that scale, you can't be like, I'm not feeling good about how this ends up. Let's scrap all these millions of dollars worth of CG, like, giant finale that we've... But yeah, I guess there's smaller things they could have done. Just like throne room changes, not necessarily giant space battle changes.
But right, something like that. Who knows? The Tusken Raiders, I like seeing them use sign language so much. And they sounded, when they were talking, they sounded like the runners in The Last of Us. Like, they had such a different... I don't think I've ever heard them speak so much. It was interesting to see. And we probably talked about this before in our Max Spoilers, but are they human? Are they aliens? What's going on under there?
I think they are aliens of some sort. That's kind of like an old Star Wars thing before Disney. So
yeah.
I don't think we've seen under a Tusken Raider's robes at all in the new era. So maybe they could go either way, but I think that they are more or less intended to be alien. And I also like that, you know, season one, Mando was doing like the sign language with them and stuff.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's doing sign language and also going,
he's getting better, and he can control their pets. Apparently it's very impressive.
Yeah.
Animal.
Yeah, he's got a great bond with everything.
I really like that scene where the Tusken Raider brings the Bantha to the mouth of the cave. It's like, here you go. And then the great dragon comes out and eats the Tusken Raider. Excellent work. Good old-fashioned joke.
They might be ready for some fresh ideas.
Yes, yes, that was great. Overall, I like this episode a lot. It was, at a certain point, I realized, this reminds me of the AT-ST episode from the first season. It's just, let's help this village take care of this bigger threat, and we have to rally together to make it happen.
Yeah, yeah, figure out how to take down the big monster with much less resources.
Yeah.
Yeah, when that episode came out, I was like, I'm glad they covered the Seven Samurai episode, but... So, you know, it's all settled, but then it wasn't necessarily covered completely. But this felt different enough, and I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I mean, this was a lot of Jon Favreau's Cowboys versus Aliens coming through again. I mean, it's just the most Western episode they've done yet. I mean, it's pretty wild.
Huge Western vibe, especially when Mando rides his speeder into town. And it's kind of like, you know, the new person riding their horse into town.
Right.
The score had an even more like Sergio Leone feel to it right at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, if we're getting into nitpicks here. In this episode alone, 3 references to Womp Rats. Can we cool it with the Womp Rats, everybody? We get it. It was referenced in episode 4. Move on from Womp Rats, please.
Apparently, they're a major problem on Tatooine.
Yeah, it's all anybody can talk about, apparently, are Womp Rats.
Yeah.
They're like the Tatooine version of centipedes.
Exactly.
But I don't get it. Like, if you're writing this script, don't you notice at a certain point, we're bringing up Womp Rats 3 times? Or is that just, let's just drive the sucker home. This is how people talk, and they have nothing else to talk about and references to make other than Womp Rats.
Yeah, that's Jon Favreau going, wait, am I the writer, director, and creator of this show? Huh, I guess nobody can stop me.
At some point, I'm going to make a supercut of every Womp Rat reference in all of Mandalorian. I think people are dying to see it. That'll take off on Max's channel. Okay, predictions. Do you think the Mandalorian will wear Boba Fett's armor at some point?
No. I'm a hard no on that one.
Because he's so... Well,
he's like, my armor is my armor. You know, if there's a place where somebody takes his armor
exactly,
off him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. What if he's like in the shower and then Boba Fett can only find his armor, so they swap it, and then you don't know who's who. I don't know. There's a lot of potential here.
It's like the Spider-Man cartoon, like pointing at each other type of meme.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Do we think by the end of the season we will see Yoda Planet?
I don't think we'll ever see Yoda Planet. I think he's going to look for Yoda Planet, and he's going to realize that that is not findable or doesn't exist, or that the true meaning of his like quest is to reunite Yoda with other people who can use the Force.
I don't know if I trust the show to have that kind of restraint. I think the idea of a finale where it's just like Endor and just the trees are lined with little Yoda-like creatures, I think that's a winning shot that I don't think they have the power to resist. Yeah.
Yeah. It gives them a chance to define a world that hasn't been seen and kind of put their stamp on the universe, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see it being like, you know, there used to be so many baby Yodas and Yodas, but sorry, the planet got blown up at some point, or some bad guys just killed everyone one day, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems to be the vibe.
Yeah, you know, I joked about the Yoda clone thing earlier, but if you remember in that first season episode where, I think it's the third episode where Werner Herzog is like running tests on baby Yoda, and he has his little like technician guy with him. The technician guy has like a Kamino like patch on his suit, which is, Kamino's the planet where all the clones came from in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. Mm. Don't they say something about it not being a clone? Is that a distant?
I thought so. I thought that's where you were going.
Yeah.
You know, that's true too. So.
Yeah. I guess we haven't mentioned the Darksaber still out there. Our boy.
Sure.
Gus still roaming the galaxy. Yeah. The question is how he will interact with Boba Fett. And that probably leads to the idea of Boba Fett probably aligning with them at some point if the big bad is ultimately going to be, what is it, Gideon? What's his name?
Yeah. Moff Gideon.
Moff Gideon. Yeah.
Yep. Seems like, yeah, Moff Gideon was probably in charge of or strongly involved with like the Mandalorian purge that they kind of reference here and there, where the Empire came in and like, you know, just torched the planet or whatever. So, I think he's still the big bad here.
Okay. Any other beats we haven't hit yet?
I want to bring up, I was surprised, I didn't notice until the credits that John Leguizamo was the Cyclops dude from the very beginning.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, this feels like a voice I should recognize, but I had no idea.
That's amazing. I couldn't figure out the effects there. I'm like, that mouth doesn't look like a human mouth, but it doesn't look like a mask either. Just figuring out where the line was between practical and CG on that guy, I couldn't figure it out. Was it just Leguizamo's mouth and then they just put the eye over it? Because it wasn't exactly mouth-like.
I had no idea.
I like that the show constantly is like, keeps you guessing like, okay, that's gotta be practical. Wait, that's CG. Wait, that, you know, like, and then they keep you on your toes. The fact that you can't tell is a great sign. Like,
yeah.
What's funny is overall with the Mandalorian, with the, you know, the dome that they use, is that everyone like with the prequels was like, oh, green screen is so terrible. You know, we don't like it. We need to be like all real backgrounds and stuff. And now that, you know, going more and more computer, looks good, people are like, oh yeah, this is the best way to do any show ever again. You know, let's never change this.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It looks so good. They're on board.
Yeah. If you guys haven't watched the, Disney Gallery Mandalorian documentary series, it's totally worth a watch. They have a whole episode about the dome thingy that they use.
Yeah.
It's super, super cool and interesting.
It's incredible. Yeah. And my favorite part of that is their messaging of like, this isn't proprietary. Like, we're just using screens and the Unreal Engine, which anybody can jump into for free. So have at it. And it's so rare for Disney to be like, come on in, everybody. This tech's for the world. It's really great.
Yeah. Speaking of tech, one thing I wanted to make sure I mentioned is that the ice cream maker makes another appearance in this episode. It's the thing that Cobb Vanth grabs that has all the crystals in it is apparently the longstanding prop from Empire Strikes Back, the ice cream maker that some dude in Cloud City is running around with, that showed up. That's what the Beskar payment was in season one.
Yeah.
And Favreau loves it so much, he brought it back for this one.
That's absurd. Deep cuts for everybody. All right, that's it. We're not going to do Max spoilers on every episode, no matter how much Ross is screaming for it. But we'll kind of treat it like we did the first season. We'll do another one at the end of the season, kind of recapping everything. So I don't know what the schedule's like. How many episodes are there? Nine again?
I think eight. There was eight first season, and I think there will be eight again. And I think they're all weekly. Like, there's no doubling up like there was in that first season.
Right. Okay, cool. Yeah, so we'll catch you again at the end of the season. But it's going to be fun to have a new episode of Star Wars every week again.
I'm so excited. It's the best thing that's happened to Star Wars in years.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess that's true. God, how did you react, by the way, Ross, when Daisy Ridley gave that interview on Jimmy Kimmel, where she was talking about, like, yeah, I don't know, with episode nine, they kept changing who my family was. Like, it was the Emperor for a little bit, then it wasn't. Like, that drove me insane. Do you remember that, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, Star Wars should plan stuff out from the beginning, because the original three movies were, like, made up as they went along. Like, Darth Vader wasn't Luke's father until they were, like, filming Empire Strikes Back, which is crazy. And you know, Leia wasn't intended to be his sister until they were writing Return of the Jedi. So you would hope that they would have it figured out by the time they started filming, really. I think maybe that's the key difference here.
Yeah, so here's her quote from this Jimmy Kimmel interview. She says, at the beginning, there was toying with, like, an Obi-Wan connection. There were, like, different versions, and then it really went to that she was no one. And then it came to episode nine, JJ pitched me the film and was like, oh yeah, Palpatine's granddaddy. And I was like, awesome. And then 2 weeks later, he was like, oh wait, we're not sure. So it kept changing.
Oh boy.
Frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty clearly Rian Johnson's intent, I think, that she was no one,
right,
in episode eight. And yeah, clearly that swung back in the other direction.
Yeah,
I liked that. I liked that she was no one and she kind of had her own identity. Like, not everyone has to be related to someone, but...
Yeah. But you know what? That's fine. That's disappointment from all of last year. Now we can be excited about Mandalorian coming back, and there's going to be a lot of fun things to unpack. And officially, Boba Fett's back. I mean, this is a big deal. It's been a long, long time with fans screaming about this.
Yeah. Do you think Boba Fett's going to come back and that'll be the Robert Rodriguez-directed episode?
He's directing one?
Yes, he is directing an episode of season two.
Oh my God. Well, they probably wait for, like, the biggest action scene for him to direct, since he has so much experience. I wonder what they do with it. But do you know who else is directing? I haven't looked at that list.
Yeah, so it's he's the kind of the biggest surprise. So it's Favreau just did this one.
Okay.
Robert Rodriguez is doing one. Peyton Reed, who directed the Ant-Man movies, is doing one.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then Dave Filoni, big Star Wars animation guy who directed a couple episodes last season, is doing at least one. Bryce Dallas Howard again, and Rick Famuyiwa again.
Oh, okay.
No Taika? Yeah.
No Taika this season, and no, the other director from season one was Deborah Chow, and I think she's doing Obi-Wan stuff.
Oh, cool.
So she's totally over there. Mm.
Yep, and then Taika is theoretically
doing his own movie, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. He's busy. They'll probably be filming it in The Expanse. Okay. That's it for this big Max spoilers for season two, episode one of The Mandalorian. Brian, is there anything you'd like to plug, sir?
No, just keep watching this. I'm excited to watch the show. I wish we could all watch it together in person, but it's good that I get to talk to someone after each episode, or at least at the end of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Ross, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter at @AreYouBadEnough, and maybe tell me which old NES game we should play next.
And again, just to be clear, this is an ongoing thing, but you aren't streaming the NES games, which drives me insane.
Maybe someday. If it wasn't meant to be streamed originally, I'm not going to stream it now.
That's the stupidest rule I've ever heard. All right, thank you so much for watching or listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye!